Yo, it's the Breakfast Club bringing flavor to the game. At the Nordic Gourmet Days, ain't no one the same. We rocking suits and ties, making moves that defy.
This episode is sponsored by escrow.com, the leader in secure online transactions for domains. Hey everyone, and welcome back to episode number 4 of The Breakfast Club, the podcast in which we discuss domain investing, life, and anything else in between. We got an exciting lineup of topics. Actually, no, today we're just improvising. Alan had a just last-minute emergency, so we're going to have a conversation with me and my buddy, Brayden. Brayden, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be back, as always. And without Alan, we get more airtime.
Yeah, so what's on your mind?
What's on my mind? Well, we got the elections coming up. I'm going to vote today. Today's the day.
All right.
I'm not going to tell you how I'm going to vote, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't if we were you.
What's that?
I wouldn't if you were you. It's never a good idea.
Well, you know, I consider myself an intelligent human being. So, you know, what's that tell you?
So today, I was listening to the podcast, The All In. They were talking about the elections. And, you know, obviously I'm not American, so I'm not going to vote. But this is so important because so many things are at stake. And of course, from our side of the world and also from our side of business, we try to figure out how does the election impact domain names? Without saying who you're going to vote, on the two sides, how do you think either Harris or Trump, if they get elected, if there's going to be any impact on the economy and by reflection on domain names?
You know, the economy always, I think it has an effect prior, you know, leading up to the election, because people don't know what they're going to do and they kind of hold back on purchases and stock market doesn't know what's going on. Like, and then someone's elected, then there's an impact on the stock market for, you know, a couple of days, and then things kind of come back to normal. And it seems that it's like, I am far from an expert on this topic, but it seems that it's people's anticipation of what might happen that affects the economy and the stock market, because stock market obviously has an effect, an immediate effect. But then things kind of simmer down, because a new president doesn't actually make immediate changes that have a massive effect on the economy right away.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I'm just thinking, I was actually having this chat with a couple of friends of mine here like on Monday, and we were saying like the worst scenario, something that it's contested, that this creates some tension and there's some, you know, arrest. So that's the kind of scenario that I think everybody's looking to avoid. And I kind of agree with you. And also, like, you know, through the podcast that I was listening to and just several people that are like interviews that I watched, pretty much both candidates, no matter what, are going to lead to some sort of inflationary scenario. What do you think about this?
Well, I mean, there's the president doesn't control that. You know, I mean, there's going to be inflation regardless. It doesn't matter who's president. There's always inflation. There always has been inflation. Well, look, I think, you know, both presidents are making promises on the campaign trail that may or may not come true, right? Like Trump, he keeps talking about tariffs. Right. And, you know, his narrative is that, you know, China is going to pay. Well, you know, that's not actually true. But his followers don't understand that. I mean, if there's a tariff, if he can push through tariffs, that just makes products more expensive, right? The consumer pays tariffs. That's who pays. It's not like it's just a tax that the country pays and, you know, all the products stay the same price. It's just not how the way math works, right? But, but you know, his followers don't really get that. So, you know, there's all kinds of promises that are made that people anticipate are going to go into effect right away. And that affects inflation or affects the stock market. And it's just not necessarily the case, right? Because those promises, you know, may never see the light of day. It's just on both sides, right? It's just campaign bullshit.
All right. A lot of different directions we can go from here. Like, first of all, like, China's going to pay. So talking about China and the Chinese market, actually, we just closed a transaction recently with a Chinese buyer. Are you seeing at all Chinese market coming back? Do you see like more inquiries or from Chinese style domain investors?
I have not, you know, I don't sell a high volume of names, right? Because I have a relatively small portfolio. I have, I don't know, somewhere around 2,000 or 2,500 names, and focused on the higher end. So I don't have that many sales, right? I have a couple a month, and that's it. So, you know, I'm not really a good barometer because I don't have volume. I sold a name to an Indian company recently. Otherwise, which I thought this is a big, you know, big company, which I thought was interesting, but I don't know of any names that sold necessarily into the Chinese market. I mean, there's always some, just like, you know, names sell all over the world, and I don't always know who the buyer is, and don't, because they come through brokers, right? A lot of my my offers come through brokers, so I don't know who the buyer is. And after it sells, I don't necessarily look it up, because, I mean, I don't care. You know, once the name is sold, it's, you know, it's funny. A lot of people think that they have some sort of stake in the company or help the company's success or have some sort of relationship. Like, we don't, you know, the name is dead to me. Like, there's no ongoing relationship with anybody. Oh,
you're like a mafia boss. Huh? Like, the name is dead to me. I've done my job. Cool. I saw the name. That's it. I want to move on.
That's it. You know, I move on because it's not like I have really, you know, sometimes it's a relationship. Sometimes I'm dealing directly with a founder of a company and we have a good relationship. Maybe I take equity in the company. You know, that does happen, but more times than not, it's, you know, somebody hits the bin or a broker buys a name and I have zero connection to that company.
Yeah.
And so whatever happens to that name really doesn't matter to me because it has no effect on my life.
Sure.
At all. So it's just, it's a one-off transaction and it's over.
But let me ask you this. So there must be occasions in which, you know, you have retained equity or like you had got some sort of deals. So for the audience out there, like, how do you approach this? Do you actually offer it as a negotiation tool? How would you look at this?
Yeah, when we're still pretty far apart on price, then I will float various options. And the first option is not me taking equity necessarily. It depends on whether or not I like what the company is doing. You have to think, is this a company you would invest your money into? And if the answer is no, then don't take equity. Unless, let's say there's a name that you're asking $150,000 and they come up to $100,000 and you're willing to take the $100,000, but you just, it's a sweetener. You say, all right, listen, I'll take, maybe they offer some shares or you ask for some shares because it's better than nothing. If you're going to take the $100,000 anyway, you might as well take the $100,000 and maybe, you know, $25,000 in shares or $50,000 in shares if they're willing to give it to you. So it's worth asking. But if you're asking $300,000 for a name and they only have $100,000 in cash, then you have to consider, well, you know, is the extra $200,000, are you willing to take equity in that company? Do you think the company is going to do anything? Is it going to go anywhere? It may be worthwhile to do it if you think it's a good investment, if it's something you invest in. But this is what I always tell everybody is you need to secure the name. So if the company goes under, you don't lose that balance, right? So you want to have a clawback clause so that if the company goes insolvent, you can claw back the domain name because it has not been fully paid for, right? Because if you don't have that clawback clause, what happens is your equity goes to zero and that domain gets sold off and the money goes to, creditors, et cetera. Investors that might have preferential rights, that sort of thing. I don't want to get too deep into that, but there's no sense in you losing out on the remaining payments, right?
Yep.
That take the form of equity. You just take the domain back. I've never seen a scenario where they don't agree to that because they're like, if we're in a business, fine. Yeah, we haven't made all the payments. You can take back. That's fair, right?
Right.
Because the founders don't get it anyway. So it goes to a creditor, and you are a creditor at that point. So make sure that you include a clawback clause.
Yeah, so this is a great tip. Like for everybody else there who's never negotiated something like this, I can definitely see why a company will never, you know, object to this. It's a easy thing to put in an agreement. So
it's never happened. I've always had companies pay off the name, or I'm still holding equity. I've never had to claw back a name from an equity deal. I've had foreclosed on names in which they were making payments and stopped making payments. So that's happened a number of times.
Right. And was this with any sort of, you know, like GoDaddy type of like list one option, or was it through like, you know, your standard agreement?
Direct. Yeah, it's always
all
direct.
Right. Cool. All right, man. So yeah, there's different action we can take from here. Like one is the domain days. So you, when are you coming, by the way?
I leave Sunday, so I'll be there Monday.
All right, so you're gonna be there for like the dinner.
I'll be there for the dinner. Which dinner? Right. There's dinners every night.
Yeah, I know. Like this one, I think is the ICA dinner, which is like sponsored by the ICA and then .it.com.
Yeah,
they're like jointly. Yeah, they're jointly organizing the dinner. So yeah, I will be there too as well. And what are you looking for this conference? Because like there is you're moderating a few panels. We're on a panel together as well. What is one thing that you will try to figure out once you're arriving in Dubai? Like one takeaway that you would like to get out? You know, like an intention for the conference besides the networking.
No, that's what I was going to say. The networking is really my intention. I like to kind of further my relationships, because there's actually a lot of people that I work with in Dubai.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends out there, and it's important to me to get FaceTime with people that I'm chatting with every day, you know, over WhatsApp and Skype and text.
Yeah.
So it's really, FaceTime is important. And it's typically like once a year when I go to Dubai that I get to see everybody out there.
Yeah, yeah. And absolutely. I think that's like probably the biggest value add of conferences, is even like our panels, probably, you know, as much as, you know, as interesting they can be, I think nothing replaces the fact that you're going to spend time with people that you do business with, because just that increases so much, just the connection you have with people. And agreed, it's probably like the things that I'm most looking forward to. But besides for that, what about the panels? What is the ones that you're mostly looking forward to?
I don't even remember which ones I'm...
Okay, you sound super excited. I can say that I look forward to ours,
I think I'm doing three panels, but I honestly don't remember. I've done so many panels and so many conferences that I don't really need to prep. I just, I take a look at, sometimes I'm on stage, like I know that I'm supposed to be on stage at 3 o'clock. I'm like, hey, everybody, what are we talking about? I'll look over, you know, at the screen to see what the topic is.
Cool. Nice. So basically, like Munir, who is the organizer of the conference, he really wants to have this focus on the regional aspect of domain names. So everything that goes around the Middle East and what they call like the MENA region, which is the Middle East and North Africa. I'm the opposite of you. I'm a prepper. So I was just looking at... Yeah, as you can tell. So I was looking and studying all this different CCTLDs. Actually, what is the CCTLD that sells the most, that has the most public sales in the region?
In the MENA region? What's the...
Yeah.
I have no idea.
It's LY, stands for Libya.
Yeah. It's funny. I have the highest LY sale in history.
No way. What is it?
Yeah. It was local.ly.
Yeah.
That I sold. God, it's probably been like 12 years or something. And I sold it for 125,000. And I think the second largest sale is something like 35,000. It's not even close in all these years.
All right, cool. No, it's awesome, because I can take note and then we can talk about it during the panel.
Well, I just talked about it, so...
Yeah, no, I'm saying, we speak for us. It's not like we're having a coffee, a conversation with the panel. We also are doing for the audience,
right?
Yeah,
we can talk about that. I tried to talk my client out of it, actually. That's the funny thing. It was an acquisition, and I wanted to get him locally.com instead.
Do you want to share the story?
Yeah, sure. So he was a big company, so budget was really not a concern. And he liked the hack, local.ly. And I said, look, this is the Libyan government, which, you know, is a little volatile. You know, can we Libyan government? I don't know. And people don't understand hacks, and it'll be confusing to people. And I checked on locally.com, and it was owned by a buddy of mine who said, who quoted the price, and it was not much. I think maybe 165, something like that. And then he came back. Ultimately, he wanted to do a swap because he wanted to buy a name. He said, look, you buy this name, and then I'll send you this name. And that way, he, you know, he could, it was just like a way to kind of avoid taxes without.
Yeah.
Without him receiving the funds and then, you know, redeploying and so it was a smart tax maneuver. And I think that price back then was like 140. So, you know, roughly the same, 125, 140, roughly the same. And so I tried to talk my client into it. I said, look, you know, roughly the same price. This is not going to be confusing because it's not a hack, and you get the keyword you want, which is locally. And we don't have to rely on the Libyan government because who the hell knows? You know, it could disappear tomorrow.
Right.
And he said, no. I really like the hack, and people aren't going to be confused because it's just the people are just going to click through on the website, and it's fine. And he really wanted that one. And then, so he bought it. And then the registry sent out a press release because it was such a big sale for them. It was by far their largest sale ever. And then he reaches out to me. This is just a few days later. He reaches out to me. He's like, what the hell is this? I said, you think that was me? First of all, like, they priced it 100,000. It was 125,000. Like, I told you, you can't trust these guys.
Of course they
press released it because it was a big sale for them. And they're trying to promote .ly.
Yeah.
Well okay. Awesome. I guess it's fine. I didn't think you would do this. I'm like, no. But once it was public, I was like, well, I might as well correct the record. It was 125.
Yeah, this goes in a different direction as well. Because so I had not a similar situation, but like, you know, it was also like a domain hack that I brokered. Like, you know, like the name DeFi, like decentralized finance.
Sure.
And basically, like the buyers, they were looking for something with a new GTLD. And I was like, yeah, guys. And it was owned by some Chinese investor who was requesting a lot of money. And then finally, we managed to get DE.FI, so DeFi, like the perfect act for it. And we got it like for a pretty good price.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it's an amazing name. But taking it from there, I think something that is interesting for everybody who was listening is, how do you see the difference between domain hacks and the actual name? So let's say local.ly versus locally.com. So in terms of value, how would you look at them? Would you think about a different percentage, or just share your thoughts?
Well, I'd have to do some research to come up with a percentage difference, but so that I couldn't tell you. I can between, you know, TLDs, like, you know, and same SLD versus comnet or .io, that sort of thing. But from a hack to the .com, because there's a hack versus, you know, .net or .org, right? So there's a lot of variables. But the hack to a .com, I mean, the .com is worth substantially more. And if you look back at all of the hacks that became big, companies that were using hacks became big, Bitly, for example, bit.ly, right? Or Delicious.
Also Libya.
Remember Delicious way back when? Which was like...
I'm not familiar with Delicious.
So Delicious was, and we're talking, I don't know, 20 years ago. And it was kind of third level. So it was a .us, and it was something like DEL dot... I mean, first of all, how do you spell Delicious? Nobody knows how to spell Delicious. It's not even a word that people can spell. I don't even know if it's, you know, uses
it. Okay.
There's actually two dots in there. So there's a third level domain, two dots on the .us. And it was, you know, it's 20 years ago. So this is, it was clever and it was computer geeks and they understand it and that's fine. But then, it got big and the general public, like, totally confused because everybody just types in delicious.com.
Yeah.
Because they don't know that there's a .us and where the hell is the other dot? Where are all the dots?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Where is it? Is it a DE dot, DEL dot?
Yeah.
So Delicious eventually became delicious.com.
Mm-hmm.
And Bitly, which was pretty simple, bit, right? .ly,
yeah,
pretty
simple yeah.
hack. They got bitly.com. Like, everybody that was using a hack had to go out and get the .com because they're losing so much traffic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the problem with hacks. And, I mean, it was worse way back when, but it's still a problem. People don't know that .ly exists or .whatever, right? Once you move off the .com and you're going to lose some traffic to the .net, from the .net and the .org, the .io, but at least people have a vague understanding that there's a non.com, but not everybody. So every other extension, every single other extension will lose traffic to the .com. Every single other extension will lose traffic to the .com, right? .com.
Well said.
Period. Right? Period. That doesn't mean there's no value, right? Those extensions definitely have value, and in some cases, they have a lot of value. But if you see a domain sell for, well, here's an example. I sold super.net for $150,000 recently. That's a high value name, right? But what's super.com worth? It's worth 15 times that, right?
Yeah, or yeah.
20 times that.
Yes, yes.
Right? So it can be high value, but it's nothing. It's a fraction compared to the .com.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Every single time. And then with the hacks are even worse because people don't understand that there's a period, there's a dot somewhere in the middle of the word. And where is it? Because they haven't heard of the .y or the dot, you know, whatever the extension is that the hack is made up of, right?
Yeah.
It's confusing because people use like IT or ET or, you know, name the country code that people, you know, in the US, for example, or UK, they've never heard of it.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about the whole concept of radio tests because, like, so there's one of my favorite podcasts. It's called, you know, this guy called Naval Ravikant, like the CEO of AngelList and, like, you know, it's like super famous. So, and yes, this podcast, which became quite famous, it was like mostly like an angel investor that then turned to more like philosophy and just general like wisdom, let's say like that. And at the end of the podcast, he said, like, hey, you can find my podcast at Naval, like nav.al without the com. So you always have to specify that there's no .com afterwards. It's always inconvenient.
Yeah, Matt Mullenweg, his blog is on ma.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's fine because it's not commercial. It's just his blog. Same with Naval.
Yes. Derek Sievers. It's sievers.rs. That one as well. It's actually a lot of like tech founders that they just have their own personal blog and they just use the CCTLD, like the hack.
Yeah. And I think it's okay because they're not losing business, right? It's just their blog. And so it's not high stakes, right? They're not marketing their blog. They're not trying to make money on it. Also, these are tech founders. So their audience understands that it's a hack. The audience understands that even though they've not heard of .tt, they get it. They get that .tt is the extension and it's not .com. They're not typing in ma.tt.com. They're not doing that, right? They understand that it's ma.tt. So that's the big difference. It's the audience. And it's also not commercial. But once you're going out to the general public, you can't go to the general public with a hack or with a non-legacy extension. It's pretty difficult. Like, you can go to the general public, quote-unquote general public, with a .io or AI if your audience is a tech-savvy audience. But if you're selling pet supplies and you're on a .io, forget it.
Yeah, 100%. And it's enjoyable, like, to have this back and forth conversation.
It's only because Alan's not here. That's why.
No, Alan is awesome. I love it. I mean, like, to be honest, like, the conversation we had in Sweden were so deep and so cool that, I mean, that's what actually got us to do this old Breakfast Club stuff. It's because, you know, it was just so interesting, all the things that we were discussing. Anyway, just wanted to add, like, a corollary to what you were saying. So I remember, like, back in the days when the Chinese market was, like, big thing. I mean, it still is, but it was not, it's not as big as it was. Remember, there were actually specific percentages for extensions compared to .com. So I remember, I think .net was exactly worth between 5% and 10%, and .org was exactly worth like 1%. And there were like all these like little rules, which now they kind of don't apply anymore. But, you know, this is just something for the audience to consider whenever they're thinking about investing in something or another.
It's not a hard and fast rule, but that still applies.
Mm.
Well, if you're trying to determine the value of a name, compare it to the value of the .com, and it's going to be a percentage of that. So I see a .net as roughly 5% of the .com value, and I see the .org as roughly, you know, 2 to 4% of the .com value. I think .org is less than .net, but not every single time. These are not hard and fast rules. Sometimes you have an SLD that's great. It's a great fit for the .org. Right.
Yeah.
Or the .net. And I mean, the .net's never worth more than .com. .com is always worth substantially more. The question is, what single percentage point value is the .net, the .com, the .net, the .org, the .io, the .ai compared to the .com?
What about .io and .ai? What would you say?
A couple of points.
Just like 2% of the value of .com?
Yeah, but again, not a hard and fast rule. If it's, I mentioned Pet Supplies. If it's petsupplies.io, I mean, Pet Supplies as an SLD is great, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a massive growing market. But on a .io or .ai, no. You can't sell Pet Supplies on a .ai because it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And your audience doesn't understand it because the audience is general public, right? So petsupplies.ai, how's the left and the right of the dot make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Just like, you know, I'm trying to think of another great SLD that wouldn't make sense. Insurance is a great SLD, but I think that probably would work, but not commercially. So if it's insurance.ai, and I have not looked up this name, I have no idea what's happening with it. I think that would work from a back end perspective, right? You can create insurance quotes. But from a retail perspective for consumer, I don't know, because they may not understand it. But
yeah,
certainly an AI generated quote and AI generated insurance products makes tons of sense.
Cool.
I don't know. But if you put in create, like, I don't know, .gg, for example, is a nice SLD that works very well in the gaming community. But what's insurance.gg worth? That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, man. So first of all, like, let's recap what we talked about. What you said is there's GTLDs as well as CCTLDs have some sort of percentage of value compared to the .com, but they are never a hard and fast rule. And the people in the audience should always look at this SLD if it makes sense in that extension. But man, this is so fun, so much fun. We should do this more often. I mean, maybe you should do like a poll for the audience to see if they like more this one-on-one conversation. Looking forward to see you in a few days. Then I guess I'll see you on Monday for dinner.
Yeah.
And anything else you want to say before we wrap this up?
Oh, I don't think so. I gotta pack soon, and yeah, that's it. I gotta wrap up some stuff before I'm gone for, I think gone for about 10 days because I'm going to Istanbul after Dubai.
Oh, I might go as well. Actually, I might just drop in for a couple of days. So maybe we can do the combo as well. All right. So I look forward to see you. And thanks for everyone for tuning in. And all right.
Smash that like and subscribe button.
Smash that like and subscribe button. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.